This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, my friends. I am honored to bring you another Leadership Momentum Podcast, episode 51, to be exact. And this one is another one that it will not disappoint. We have two guests that are absolutely phenomenal, and I'm very confident that their wisdom is going to add tremendous value to you and your leadership. And whether you serve in the church world or maybe you serve in the business world, whether you're currently leading thousands of people or you're a young aspiring leader, and maybe you don't even have a team yet, right? Either way, it's going to add some value to your life. The content today is really for everybody. Today, we're talking with author and pastor Eric Geiger. He is ridiculously phenomenal as a leader. He's also a good friend, an executive vice president at Lifeway. And he stopped by the studio a couple weeks ago to chat about how to ruin your life. Yeah, how to ruin your life. His latest book. I know that sounds a little negative, but the title of the book goes on to say, "And Starting Over When You Do." And it's an eye-opening book, but it's also very encouraging. And to be very honest with you, it's a conversation that the church community needs to be having. I know that you would agree with that. So we're going to talk about this whole idea of people ruining their life. And after Eric Geiger, we'll be chatting with the legend Matt Redman, all about ministering to people through music and through praise and worship. He's one of the very best in the world. So obviously his wisdom and advice is priceless. All right, so let's get started. Here is my recent conversation with Pastor Eric Geiger. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us here on the Leadership Momentum Podcast.
Chris, man, it is an honor hanging out with you. I can't believe we don't hang out more.
I know. We're right up the road, and we go back to our Miami days.
I know. We played hoops against each other one time, right?
Yeah, well, only a couple times because I know you got game, and I'm like, I'm a little intimidated around you.
But you beat us that one time. We had our two staffs play against each other,
yeah,
and y'all beat us.
Well,
it was painful.
When you say y'all, you're just including me just because I was on the court, but I didn't do much.
I think you were kind of beastly in the rebounds, man.
I like your memory better than mine. Well, folks, I told you earlier, he's the best-selling author of books like books that you've probably read, Creature of the Word, and his book on church leadership, Simple Church, which I know many of you have read. He serves as the senior vice president at Lifeway Christian Resources, leading the resources division specifically. And I want to talk about his latest book. Lots of things we could talk about with Eric Geiger, but his latest book is called, if you haven't picked it up yet, April 3rd is when it came out, How to Ruin Your Life. And then I love the tagline. Tell me about the tagline.
Starting over when you do.
Yeah. So it's not just the negative side of it. It's the positive side too. This is something that I really want to talk about because this is not just for, maybe you're listening to this and your mind automatically goes to lead pastor.
Right.
It's not just about lead pastors. It's anyone who's in power, anybody, period.
Right.
We can really complicate our own lives. So tell us a little bit about the latest with Lifeway. I'd like to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And then the latest with you, which obviously has to do with the book. But you've got a lot of things going on. So just kind of catch us up on Eric Geiger world.
So my kids keep growing to 10 and 8. And that's the biggest blessing as far as my personal life, watching them grow.
10 and 8, that's fun.
Been married to Kay for 21 years and so loving that marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's been great. Lifeway, things have been there 6 years now, a little bit over six, and it's been a really fun run. And the last couple months, we've really integrated our stores into the resources division that I lead. So those used to be, you know, same company, but we're two different areas, and we've connected those together, and so excited about the future opportunities we have with that. And then the book, it came from a painful place.
Yeah.
In many ways, I didn't want to write the book, but I had multiple people saying, Eric, you've got to write this. I'd given a talk to all of our employees one day because we were grieving of seeing ministry leaders that we love and families and even some employees just make absolutely foolish decisions that led to an implosion and crumbling of their character. And so I just poured out my guts one day to our team, and several said, Eric, you've got to make that into a book. That's how it came about.
Yeah. So and many of us listening in right now, we're thinking about a few people, but
right.
You chose to go down a route where you didn't mention any names.
Right.
It was nothing about a person. It was more about a concept.
Yep.
Why did you choose to go that angle?
Multiple reasons. One, man, when I wrote the book, you know, 12, 18 months ago, the stories that were hot then are old news now, and there's a whole new slate of stories. Mm-hmm. And so the sad and sobering thing is there's always a onslaught of new stories of leaders imploding. And as you mentioned, it's not just leaders. Their stories are more prominent. You know, yeah. They hit our social media feeds. We read them more, but they're not more prevalent. There's regular people in our neighborhoods, our families, our churches that are ruining their lives as well. And so chose not to go after, you know, I didn't want to pile on to people who were in pain.
Yeah.
I mean, I love these people.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any better than them. I feel very, actually, when I see people who I really believe loved Jesus more than I do, when they fall, I feel more frail, not more strong.
Yeah.
And so I went basically the route of looking at King David's fall in 2 Samuel 11, because if he can fall, anyone for sure can.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he wrote Psalms, he united the kingdom, he was a man after God's own heart.
Yeah. This is not just a problem that's happening. Oh, it's this, you know, modern church world.
Right.
This is something you're saying all the way back to biblical times.
Totally. And sadly, if the statement's true, there's nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even true in our sense.
Yeah.
We still fall the same way.
So let's talk about David.
Yeah.
What was it that made David fall? What are some of the things, and how does that translate to the reasons why we fall?
Yeah, so the chapter 11 of 2 Samuel is that the whole chapter is just it's like a Dateline special. Uh-huh. It's crazy what happens. I mean, this guy, not only does he sleep with Bathsheba, not only is she pregnant, but he kills her husband, misuses military resources to do so. Uriah carries his own death certificate to Joab, and Uriah is so trustworthy, he doesn't even, you know, peer into the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a horrible story. But the first five verses of 2 Samuel 11 give us a sense of what really was going wrong in David's heart.
Mm-hmm.
So first, we see he's isolated. That's verse one. He sends people away, and he remains alone. So he didn't have people around him who would have held him accountable, who would have stopped him, who would have said, this is foolishness. So he had people around him. He chose to surround himself with people who were impressed with him, who would tell him whatever he wanted to hear, who would even go get a married woman for him. And so first, he was isolated. Second, you see in verse 2, he was bored. He's looking for something. So he gets up from his bed and walks on the roof. He's just looking for something. Chris, you've probably heard this. I've heard this a lot in recent years of people saying, I'm just in a bored season. I'm bored with my job. I'm bored with my role. I'm bored with my marriage. I'm just bored. That is a recipe for destruction.
Yeah. Sometimes it's masked as I'm looking for a challenge.
Right. I feel underutilized.
Yep. Yeah.
There's something off. There's something missing. Well, that right there can easily be, I'm going to look for something other than the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, if you're bored, you're not looking at him.
Wow.
Because he is never boring.
Right.
You're not looking at the Lord if you're bored, because the Lord is always satisfying, always quenching.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, he for sure, and this is not a surprise because we know the scripture says pride always comes before the fall. He was filled with pride. He finds out that Bathsheba's married. Tells the people in the palace, go get her. Go get her anyway. I don't care if she's married. Anything I want, I get. I'm the king. Look what I've done. Look at my approval ratings. Look at all I've accomplished. If this is what I'm asking for, go get her.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt entitled. And whenever we feel entitled, it's a very good indication that pride is corrupting us.
What are some things that, no matter what the role is, it might be a campus pastor, it might be a preschool director, and just there's some power. You are the person in charge. Everyone's looking to your guidance. You mentioned the word power. What are some things that leaders can put into place to just proactively know that's going to be our major sin? It's going to be our major temptation.
Yeah.
Even me as a Ramsey personality,
yeah.
Like I could get really, you know, prideful.
Right.
What are some things that we can put into place to make sure that we hedge against that?
Yeah, so C.S. Lewis called pride the great sin, and he even said, this is in his classic work, Mere Christianity, it's the sin you recognize in everyone else, but you don't recognize in yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is scary, because if pride goes before destruction, and I can't see pride in myself, how am I going to detect this and slay it in my heart so it doesn't kill me?
Yeah.
So, you know, one way for sure to look at it is, am I still filled with gratitude? Is my gratitude increasing or is my gratitude decreasing? Because when entitlement goes up, gratitude always goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So a leader can, especially a leader who's been fruitful and successful, and we want that. No leader says, I don't want to be fruitful. So when you are fruitful in your leadership, there is a temptation to start to feel you're owed things. Look what I've done. Look what I've accomplished. Look what I've done for the ministry or the organization. But when you move into a sense of I'm owed things, you then it's for sure pride, because you were saying I'm the one responsible for all these good things, as opposed to the Christian perspective is, if anything good's happened, it's really been the graciousness of God. Mm-hmm. He's the one who's accomplished these things. He's the one who's pulled these things off. So when we move into a sense of I'm owed, it's for sure pride. I'm pulling this off. And so for me, after seeing a lot of, not just leaders, but even people I love fall, a check for me is, am I really filled with gratitude? Do I really believe, and am I acting as if everything I have is from the Lord? He's given it. It's His gracious gift to me, and not something I've achieved or earned.
You know, you'd mentioned earlier about having people around you that are going to just tell you whatever you wanted to hear. I can't help but think that your environment matters as well.
Right.
When I think of certain people that come into my mind, I think of the environment they were in. Talk to the person who is surrounding the leader. How do they navigate between being a yes person? You do want to be a we can do it kind of person, but you also want to be the person who can speak really some intelligence into a situation. Hey, we're going down a road that's not good. How do they navigate that tension between trying to be a positive person towards the vision, but being able to raise that white flag?
That's good. Because if every time you go into your leader's office, you're going in to confront your leader, you're not going to be going into his office much.
That's true.
You know, if every time that the leader has this big idea, you're going to be the guy who's, you know, what's really the motivation here? Then when your phone shows up on that leader's cell when you call, the leader's going to hate the idea of answering the phone to talk to you. So you have to have credibility with the leader to be able to have the difficult conversation. So it's really an art. It's being super loyal, a person who's let's get it done, positive, as you mentioned. But that then earns the right to take some risk and pull the leader aside when there's things that are off. You have to. You may regret doing that, but you'll regret more not doing it.
So true.
When the leader implodes. We can learn a little bit from Joab here. Definitely not perfect.
Yeah.
But he was one who was sent away from David when he fell. Later in David's life, you may remember the story when he wants to count everybody, wants to do this census. Joab goes to David and says, this is detestable before the Lord. And he doesn't even fully obey the command from David. There's 12 tribes. He only counts 10 of the tribes. So he was willing to take a risk and tell David, man, this is not right. This is not good. And David trusted Joab or listened to Joab, had enough of a relationship with Joab where Joab could go in and do that.
So let's talk about the tension between, we talked about pride, and I think you do this really well. To be a national personality, to be a senior leader, you've got, maybe it's a church of 80, maybe it's a church of 300, doesn't matter. You've got a lot of people looking towards you for direction, for charisma, for energy, for urgency, expectancy. They're looking to you. You know the lights are on you. You're on the stage. You're that particular person. So you've got to have this humility, not pride, but you also have to have a little bit of confidence and some ego to be able to do that. I feel like you do that really well. You lead on a big national scale, but every time I'm around you, there's a humility about you. How do people battle that tension?
Yeah, it's a deep question. You have to definitely get to the point where you believe that humility and confidence aren't mutually exclusive. You can be humble and confident at the same time. That being humble doesn't mean you're, you know, self-debasing and you're overly critical of yourself. Humility is to, as the scripture says, to not think more highly of yourself than you should. To have a proper view of yourself, to realize anything I have that's good is from the Lord. Even the work ethic I'm bringing to the table is from the Lord.
Yeah.
He's given me the drive and the passion, and he's also given me the ability to get out of bed today and crank it and make things happen. All of it's from the Lord. So to just live with the sense that he's ultimately the one who's in charge, all of this is from him, and it's a gift, and therefore I'm gonna lead with confidence in response to the gift of leadership, the gift of this role, the gift of this stewardship that he's given.
Well, folks, obviously you can tell Eric's tone. How to ruin your life sounds so brutal. It's not got a brutal tone. There's a second half to that title, and it's starting over when you do ruin your life, because that's not always something that happens to us. Sometimes it's something that we do. It's just be real. Let's talk about that next section. Yeah. Let's say someone's listening right now, and no matter what their role is,
right,
they've just recently ruined their life in some capacity. What would be your encouragement for them?
God's grace is bigger than your fall. God's mercy is deeper than your ruin. As painful as the ruin is, it may be a couple years from now, because it's super painful right now, that you'll look back and this will be the best thing that happened, because God's going to use this ruin to awaken you to your sinfulness, to your pride, to some issues that were deep within that you hadn't addressed. Mm-hmm. And if you'll repent, if you'll come to him for mercy and grace, well, we know that from David's story.
Yeah.
My favorite psalm in the Bible, Psalm 51, is written after David was confronted by the prophet Nathan. And so David started over. He dealt with consequences the rest of his life, but the Lord's mercy was greater than David's sin.
Mm, I love it. Very cool stuff. Well, I know your heart, and would it be accurate to say that this book was written not to heap a bunch of guilt and shame on one group of people?
Right.
It was to proactively give some guidance to save people from ruining their life.
For sure that. And the crazy thing about implosions of leaders, it is not one theological tribe or one approach to ministry.
So true.
It is transcending there's not one group that can say, oh, if you'll just believe like we believe or do church like we'll do church, you'll be immune to this. Not true.
I'm so glad you said that.
It is happening in every single tribe.
And I don't feel like anyone's like out there throwing major stones, but there's some thoughts there. That's that tribe. No, it's not a certain denomination. It's for Eric and I, who are exposed to every denomination and really almost every religion, we're talking church leaders everywhere. It is in every single one of them.
Epidemic. And when someone says, and even it happens subtly, like you mentioned, when someone will say, this leader who fell, he just didn't have this around him. What they're essentially saying is, I have this around me, therefore I won't fall.
Yeah, which is probably...
That's pride.
Number one indicator.
Or, this leader believed this, which within what that person is saying is, I don't believe this, therefore I won't fall.
Yeah, it's so good.
But the reality is, I mean, Paul, the apostle, wrote, if you think you're standing firm, be careful you don't fall. Implosions transcend theological tribe and preference. They are happening because it's about a leader's heart, not about... the doctrinal statement that a leader has hanging on his wall.
So good. And would you say that it transcends size of church as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We just hear about the big ones.
We hear about the bigger ones because the media loves to say, and that is a struggle, man. The media loves to point to those to, see what you Christians are really like.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, folks, once again, it is called How to Ruin Your Life and Starting Over When You Do. Eric Geiger is a great friend of mine and a great friend to the church world in general. Eric, we're very thankful for your time. Where can people pick up the book? I'm sure it's everywhere.
It's every place that sells good books.
Well said. I love it. Well, it's always nice to connect with a good, solid leader like Eric. And guys that never even realize how big of a deal they are. There's those kind of people. He is the man, but he stays so humble about how God is using him. Again, folks, the book is How to Ruin Your Life and Starting Over When You Do. I'll boldly say this. If I were a lead pastor, this would be something that I would have my whole entire team read, especially any staff that holds any role of power. And same thing with the business world. If I owned a business, my team would be reading this book. So very, very important topic and very well written. All right. You've been singing his songs for years. Songs like The Heart of Worship, You Never Let Go, and Blessed Be Your Name, the Grammy-nominated Our God, and the double Grammy Award-winning 10,000 Reasons. His name is Matt Redman. Matt has been a full-time worship leader since the age of 20. He's been worship leading for over 20 years, and his journey has taken him to countries like South Africa. He's led worship in Japan and India, Australia, Germany, Czech Republic, and along the way, he has led worship in about every epic venue that you can imagine. And Matt is also the author of several books. He's brilliant. And so when I want to talk praise and I want to talk worship, well, I call him up. So I called Matt a while back, and we were talking about his new album, Glory Song, that came out last year. But the conversation went a direction that was unexpected. We talked about brokenness. We also talked about the church's need for diversity. We talked about how leadership can support worship teams. And we talked about a lot more. So here's a short clip of our conversation. We have Matt Redman on the line, two-time Grammy Award winner, and obviously a worship leader, Matt Redman. Matt, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You came out with your 13th album. I can't even imagine that. Glory Song, released in September. I want you to tell us a little bit about it. What makes it different from your other ones? And why'd you write it? Because that's what I want to get to, is the why behind it. Of course, we know Matt Redman music is amazing, but I want to get to the why. So tell us all about it.
Well, I love writing songs and love seeing what songs can do in people's lives. You know, something about music, the way it can take some hope or some peace or some kind of stability or something into people's lives always amazes me. And I guess that's why I've done so many albums. And so I was in California on sabbatical, and we decided let's stay a little bit longer and record in LA. So we recorded this at Capitol Records. And it's interesting because every time you write a song or record an album, you're always looking for that little fresh thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone once said to me that the best songs have a universal theme in a unique way. You could probably say the best films, or, you know, you could apply that to a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got the same kind of message, the same kind of story, but they've got this twist on it that makes it brand new. And that happens with songs, but also with the album. So this time we were thinking, what is that? And I was thinking about some of the relationships that have been developing with some people more in the gospel music world, like Tasha Cobbs Leonard, a great producer and songwriter called Aaron Lindsay, who's won tons of Grammys and done a great amount of stuff in that area. And it got me thinking, like, that would be awesome. Relationally, it'd be fantastic. Musically, it'd be great. And to be honest, it wouldn't do any harm. Sometimes I feel like in the church, there's not a lot of enmity between some of these streams, but sometimes there's not a lot of effort either. And that's definitely my experience of, like, man, we could do with working and worshiping together a bit more and creating together. So from the very outset with this record, from the writing, the recording, and the guest singers on it, we decided to reach out across some different streams.
So you had Tasha Cobbs, you also had a choir engage in this, and there's a bunch of other people too that partnered with this, but the whole spirit was just unity, right, in the church world.
Absolutely.
Who were some of the other folks that you partnered with?
Kiara Sheard's on it, and again, she's one of the most phenomenal gospel singers on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tasha Cobbs Leonard is actually the most streamed gospel musician in the world as of right now, and so it's amazing to have them part of it. And, you know, I've been in different environments where they've been leading, and I always come away thinking they've got something I don't have. You know, there's something I can learn from here, something I can grow in. And, you know, sometimes the biggest mistake creatively can just be getting a room with people who think like you, they grew up like you did, they've got the same approach to songwriting you do. Sometimes some of the very best songs and the very best surprises come from when you get in a room with people who've got a whole different outlook and perspective, and they solve things differently in the songwriting process. You can just learn so much, and you can create something that's nowhere near what you would have done on your own. So I've loved that on this record. And like I said, it's mainly been a relational thing and a musical thing, but I'm not unaware of the news, you know, and I'm just a little English Brit guy, so I don't have a lot to say on this, but, you know, there's not a day goes by, is there, where isn't something we're reminded of some of the tension of in this country. And sometimes you feel like the church, maybe we could do a little bit better at mirroring or reflecting, you know, something of the heart of God in this area, to be one. And, you know, and having people like Tasha on here and talking to people like her and Aaron and the choir, this guy called Jason McGee, man, there's little moments where I know they felt a little bit let down from some of the streams of the church that I've been in. And, you know, I didn't make this album as a political thing, but let's be honest, God is all into unity. And and I think we're better together, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know everyone listening in is saying, yes, preach, preach, Matt. Yes. You know, we all love it. We love unity when we see it. But what makes the difference between what you've done now and what many of us can say that we've done, it's one thing to say that you admire it, Oh, I just admire that. That's so great. It's so beautiful when it happens, but it's one thing to just seek out and be intentional and go after it and actually do it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I absolutely love, talking about this.
So cool.
The power behind it. And like you said, it's so dangerous when we get in a room and it's just people like us. We're missing out on all the different points of view, all the different giftings.
And what was beautiful is when we got together with Tasha, was thinking this, like, I want to learn from you and I love what you do and how you approach this. And can you tell me more about this? And she came in, she said, I reached out to you because I thought you got something we don't have.
Yes.
She said, there's some depth in some of the lyrics. I want to learn to be, a better lyricist. And it was really interesting, like kind of just recognizing the areas where we both could grow in and recognizing the strength in the other person. And just that's so often what happens in the creative thing. Is when you learn to lean into other people's strength. Some of the people I write best with, you develop this relationship where you see their strength, you celebrate their strength, and you think, man, I don't have that, so I'm going to lean into you in this moment. Let's bring something out of you. And I love that.
So Glory Song is the name of it.
Yes.
Okay, of the album. Where Glory Song, out of all the things that you could have named it, why Glory Song?
Well, actually, my wife was reading a book, and it was about this account of revival in the church in Europe. And there was one place where so many people had become Christians in this community that would sing on the train on the way to work, fill up the carriage with music, and they would call it a glory song. And so she was telling me about this, and I thought, that's a lovely phrase. And actually, it ties into one of the things I'd see would probably be my main passion in songwriting of the last decade. And that is to try and paint a bigger picture of God in worship.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in culture is going in the opposite direction. Mystery gets sucked out of life. There's a lot of irreverence in our world rather than reverence. And it seems like so much of the pattern of life goes against that. But actually, when it comes to approaching God in worship, those are key ingredients. It can't just be adoration or admiration.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be applause or acclaim. There has to be something beyond that. There has to be awe in the mix. There has to be wonder. There has to be a sense of you are not like us, And so that became a little bit of a thread on the record. There's one point where I sing out in a prayer, did we lose the awe of God? Where is all the reverence gone?
Mm.
God restore the glory song. So that's the story behind the title.
I've heard you say before, and I don't know where I heard it, but when it comes to real, meaningful worship, there's always going to be a sense of rawness and brokenness in the equation, this whole idea of brokenness. And we've all been there. Hopefully, I pray that everyone's been there, broken in worship in the equation. And the way God shapes our lives, you say this, what I love is it's always done gracefully.
Yeah.
Like this whole idea of brokenness and done gracefully. There's not a sense of unkindness or harshness or helplessness, you say. There's always a grace to it. You wrote a song, Gracefully Broken. I can't help but think that those are the thoughts behind this single. Tell me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, no one's going to escape a season of brokenness in their lives. No one is going to go through this life and not at some point know what that feels like. When it comes to worship, it's an interesting thing as well. The nature of surrender, there will always be an element of that in there too. But exactly what you said, it's a different kind of brokenness. God is always up to something. There's never a helplessness to it. Like I said, always a purpose.
Yeah.
And when I go through life, sometimes you can't see God in the mix. You don't recognize him there. But it's sometimes when you look back and then you start to see his track record of faithfulness. You see how he planted something, even in the soil of suffering, and now something really amazing's happening in life. There's a great moment in the story of Joseph where he calls his son Ephraim. In the Bible, because he says it means the Lord may be fruitful in the land of my suffering.
Mm.
And that would almost be like for me, my life verse. I lost my dad when I was 7 years old. He took his own life. I had a very turbulent teenage years with a guy my mum remarried. He ended up going to jail for a couple of years. And in the midst of it, though, I'd seen enough of God already, even at that young age, to get that he was good and he was great and he was in control. And I couldn't have recognized in that moment anything good coming out of it. All I could see was darkness and despair. But now I look back and I think I wouldn't have volunteered for that. And I don't think every cloud has a silver lining or you can put a bow on everything. But I have to say I can recognize that God's grace was never far away. God's purposes were never far away.
Mm. You know, this whole idea of being broken during worship, and then the fact that he breaks us in worship with a touch of grace, when it's covered with grace, I've never been able to verbalize that. I felt it, and I'm just so thankful that you've put in words to it exactly what's happening. So the next time it happens to me, maybe it's this weekend or maybe it's next weekend, that now I've got some, you know, this is exactly what God's doing. You know, you've led worship in a lot of different venues. This one, I think, if I'm right, you recorded in a studio, right?
Yeah, this is Capitol Records. The last three albums have been live albums. The one before last was at Abbey Road. So we're on a little run of Iconic Studios right now.
Yeah, you are.
I don't know how long I'm going to get away with that, but it's been fantastic.
Well, you know, the last three are live. This is obviously a unique dynamic, but whether you've led, you know, worship in a lot of different areas, whether it be in a studio, on the roof of a studio, a soccer stadium, Madison Square Garden, no matter where you're at. Take us through the whole idea of recording in a studio, like how that was different. But at the end of the day, worship isn't different, is it?
No, absolutely. It's really interesting you ask that because, yeah, we've done these three live albums. One of them, we took the big room at Abbey Road where they do all the orchestral scores, and we piled about 400 worship leaders in there and had a fantastic night. Just had church in there, really. Pastor Louis Giglio flew over, and that was great. But this time, proper studio record. But the producer said to me, hey, I've seen you lead worship. I've heard these live records. There's something about the way they breathe. There's something about, they don't just speak of these kind of structured songs. There's something about an open-ended, living, breathing conversation with God that comes across. And he said, I don't want to lose that on the live record. So I'm giving you full permission. If you feel we're not done with the song, keep going. If you feel something needs to change, if you want to sing something different out, he said, let's try and create something of that dynamic. Mm. And it was actually fantastic. We had, there's a song called One Day When We All Get to Heaven on the album. And we finished and the piano player just kept playing. And I just went to a whole other place. I started naming some of the things that will never be. Because, you know, I'd been quite general in the song. No more tears, no more fear, no more anxiety. But in the end, I was singing, you know, there's never going to be any more cancer. There's not going to be any more depression. And, you know, it was just a moment to take the song a little bit deeper. And we did that a few times. And when this gospel choir came in, they were all over that. They're brilliant musicians. They sing with all sorts of people. John Legend. But they've got these beating hearts of worship as well. And whenever I gave them permission to just go freestyle, they were all over it.
They did.
It was so wonderful.
I love that. So you mentioned that song. Is it really important to you to make sure that you mix in hymns in each one of your albums?
I do love that. You know, I love what it does. It tells us we're not part of this little club that just exists now. We're part of this epic heritage. You know, we've got this incredible family history. And we've always been a singing people since the very beginning. The people of God, you know, have been a singing people. There's a songbook in the Bible, the Psalms, kind of crazy. It's a whole songbook, 150 songs, would have been the hymn book of Jesus as he walked the earth. And then you look down through the centuries and we never stop singing. The people of God always find a way to make melody and to bring their praise through music. And I absolutely love that. And I think some of the hymn writers have been my biggest teachers. Some of the theology, some of the poetry absolutely blows me away. Charles Wesley, 81 years old, on his deathbed, he spoke out his very last hymn. And it's just one verse long. It says this: in age and feebleness extreme, who shall a helpless worm redeem? Jesus, my only hope thou art, strength of my failing flesh and heart. Oh, could I catch one smile from thee and drop into eternity? And I'm like, man, you can't write that stuff out. We can't forget that stuff, can we? We've got to learn from it. We've got to celebrate it. And I think we've become better songwriters, better worshipers. I love it.
That's so good. So what's the most important advice that you would give to worship leaders right now? Like you are right now standing backstage at a worship leader who's listening in right now, and you were going to grab them by the shoulders, and you're going to give them worship advice. As they walk out there, what would you tell them?
I think I'd say beware of the stage. You know, it can be a very disorientating place. When you're on a stage, people think you're something you're not. They're just seeing you do what you do, the very best you do it. They don't see all the little chinks in your arm or all the little areas you need to grow in. you know, the older I get, the more I realize areas as a father, as a husband, as a friend, areas I need to grow in, you know. And sometimes people just see you on the stage and they think you're this holy man or something. I'm just a little English guy writing songs because I love God and I'm trying to live up to those songs, you know. But the stage can be a disorienting place. It can actually mess up how you think about yourself. Some people get on a stage and suddenly they think they're better than they are. Sometimes they think that makes them immune to have to keep growing emotionally or psychologically or spiritually. And so I'd say just be real careful. You know, if God trusts you with that, trusts you with being up in front of people, make sure you keep yourself small in the depths of your heart, bow low every day, have these ruthless heart checks where you ask God, search me and know me, show me if there's anything in me that is not in line with what how you want me to be thinking, how you want me to be acting. So I'd say that, yeah. Very careful how you tread the stage.
I love that. Keep yourself small in the depths of your heart.
I stole that. That's an old Francois Fenelon quote. He, a few hundred years ago, he was like an advisor to one of the King Louis of France. Yeah, make yourself a little in the depths of your heart.
I love it. I love it. So let's kind of turn this on its head a little bit. What would you tell lead pastors in regards to maybe what worship pastors need the most? How can they best support the calling of a worship leader?
I think I would say create an environment where creativity can flourish, because actually some of the environments I've seen in big churches, because they have to be run like organizations, right? A big church. Sometimes the environment that's created isn't the best environment for creativity. Creativity, you need to be vulnerable. You need to have, be able to risk. You need to be able to try stuff and get it wrong sometimes. And so it's an interesting dynamic that I think I would say to a pastor. You know, you can't, when it comes to creativity and the arts and all this kind of thing, that you might have to have a slightly different kind of environment from the way the rest of the machine works, you know.
Well, Matt, before I let you go, I'd just love it if we're in this just talking about unity. And obviously, that's why you wrote the album. Before I let you go, could you just talk straight to the listener and boldly give them your vision for unity in the church, unity in the nation? I know you're not a politician, you're not trying to be, but just give us your spirit. You obviously lead worship in multiple nations all over this country. Tell us about your vision for unity and inspire us a little bit.
You know, every time I've stepped into this area of pursuing unity, reaching out to different streams of the church, I just feel like God smiles on it. This record itself, had these couple of days writing with Tasha Cobbs Leonard. She ended up recording four of the songs. I recorded one of them too. Probably had about 2.5 million views of that song already between us. And I just had a sense when we were doing that together, and we made a very conscious effort to write together, that God was smiling on it. And I love that sometimes I get to be in a Pentecostal environment, and the next day I could be with a, you know, in a Catholic environment or a very high church Anglican thing. And everywhere I go, I see strength. I don't agree with everything. I wouldn't subscribe to everything. But I've never been in one stream of the church where I haven't come away thinking I need to learn from that.
That's right.
You know, and so it just reminds me that we are better together. And I know that God loves it when we step out beyond our normal streams, when we make an effort to really go a little bit deeper into the family of God, that he smiles on it.
That was powerful. I just know if we had that on some kind of live stream on Instagram, we'd have hearts going all over the place. People are saying, preach, preach.
Excellent.
Very, very good stuff. Matt, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for your work. Thank you for inspiring us, you know, whether we're in our car or whether we're in the shower, but we have listened to you everywhere we go. And we're so thankful for the many years of you just, whether it be in church or whether it just be working in the yard, you've ministered to us in a powerful way. Thanks again for delivering another gem to us with Glory Song.
Thanks so much. Lovely to chat with you today. Here I am, God, arms wide open.
Here I am, here I am, pouring out. Well, folks, many of you have it already, but if you haven't gotten Glory Song by now, you owe yourself a favor. And I get it. And now when you listen to it, hey, you're going to know the depth of the heart behind the album. So very, very cool stuff for sure. All right, folks. Well, that is it. Thank you so much for being part of this Leadership Momentum community. Be sure to share this episode with whoever you think may benefit from hearing it. Be sure to check out episodes that you may have missed. I know our last two episodes with Bill Hybels and Brian Houston were absolutely fantastic. And be sure to check out another free resource, the Life Money Hope podcast. And I'm doing a special call out about Life Money Hope, my other podcast, because I want you to know how many church leaders are using it as a free resource. This is a 1 hour show that talks not just about money, but also about real life issues that people are facing on a continual basis. Top notch, respected guests, and it's there to come alongside the church leader and to help disciple during the week as well. All you have to do is text the word LMH podcast, all one word, LMH podcast, to 33789. And you do that and you'll be all set. We're not going to ask them for their information. We're not going to ask them for their money. We simply just want them to know this is a free, hopeful, it's equipping, empowering, and encouraging resource that's free just for them. And also for you, if you'd like to engage in it. Very, very good content. You know, people ask me sometimes, what can I do for you? And I typically say, I'm good, right? Does that happen to you too, right? Well, I'm finally going to cash in. I'm going to ask you for a favor. This show is helping a lot of people, and we'd love to have you join the community over there at Life, Money, Hope. Again, LMH podcast at 33789. And thank you so much for helping spread the word. My friends, it has been a pleasure. I'm here to serve you. Let me know if I can do anything for you. Just message me at Chris Brown On Air on all social media platforms, or you can email me at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. And until next time, let's continue to manage God's blessings, God's way, for God's glory.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. To learn more about Momentum, go to stewardshipcentral.org/solutions. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his Life, Money, and Hope podcast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following @ChrisBrownOnAir. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast.